You are now tuned into anything potable, the most honorable, the most audible.
Welcome to
like Paul Pierce when he
anything is potable, the Boston Celtics podcast here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm your host, Sam Jam Packard, professional sports fan, and I am joined, as always, by the kid, the god, the legend himself, Celtics beat reporter from The Athletic, Jay King, ladies and gentlemen, and we are coming to you recording on Tuesday, December 6th, after the Celtics have just won a back-to-back to start their road trip. Get one win against the Brooklyn Nets, another win up in Toronto against the Raptors. Jay, I gotta say, I've been a little sick over the past couple of weekends, so I watched the games, but I'm not gonna say I might have the best analysis, and so I'm gonna lean on you to tell me what's happened in Celtics land over the past four games.
So let's start with the last two games.
Okay, let's do it.
The two games on the road, the back to back, the Celtics, like, they didn't have their best game at all in either of those games. And in Brooklyn, they just kind of kept playing defense. Joe Mazzulla did his whole don't call a timeout early thing while the Celtics were down 11-2. And then they went on a 14-0 run immediately. And then the Nets actually had a call timeout, which was kind of a wild timeout swing there. But yeah, their offense just didn't look great in that game. Probably the worst their offense has played all season, if not, like, pretty close. So, but their defense, they forced a bunch of turnovers. Tatum and Brown both got the better of KD down the stretch. KD had, I think it was 5 turnovers in the fourth quarter. Tatum ripped him twice. Jalen kind of... The ball must have been slippery, though.
The a lot ball of wide-open dunks for the Celtics in that game. You think it was a slippery ball?
Well, Al Horford had the 3 from the corner that just, like, went halfway to the hoop. And Tatum said the ball was slippery. And then on one fourth quarter play, Durant had kind of a similar thing happen where he went up for a shot and it just slipped, popped right out. So ball might have been very slippery, but yeah, I think the last couple games were games that, like, good teams lose a lot of the time. But great teams find a way to overcome their inadequacies. And I just felt like the first half against Toronto, Celtics just didn't have it, no energy. And then third quarter, they just turned it on. And Tatum was awesome. Marcus Smart was awesome. And, like, to have that type of game on the second night of a back-to-back with no Al Horford, no Malcolm Brogdon, no Robert Williams, who hasn't played all season, but still worth mentioning. Like, you're down your two best big men. You're starting Blake Griffin, who rarely plays but has been pretty okay when he does get his spot starts. And I think that's a sign of a great team to kind of find a way to get that one. And to do it on the road, second night of a back-to-back in Toronto against a pretty good Raptors team that was, you know, pretty healthy. So just that was really impressive to me just because they did not have it and they still were able to pull away and still were able to, I mean, down the stretch of the fourth quarter, they weren't, like, super sharp. They kind of let the Raptors, like, semi get back into the game, but not really. It was never too close. And to be able to do that on the second night of a back-to-back when you don't have it, and it was clear, like, they just didn't have their normal energy from the start. Like, that's impressive. And you can almost see the Celtics, like, get to the point where they're like, okay, it's time. It's time. And then they just kind of turned it on and ran away from the Raptors.
I think that's it's a very impressive thing. So they absolutely thrashed the Heat in the first game. Jason Tatum scores a ridiculous amount of points. And then they really struggled.
Not quite 50.
They almost got technical fouls, so much so that he could get 50, but it didn't happen. But then they really struggle against the Heat on Friday night. lots of turnovers. Clearly, we're not playing their best basketball. Just couldn't deal with the zone. Turnovers galore. Jason Tatum couldn't hit a shot. And you're right. It clearly, they weren't like clicking, weren't having this the league's best offense. But they found a way to win. And you talked about how their offense like didn't really click against the Nets. But Jaylen Brown still scored 34 points and Jason Tatum still scored 29 points. It feels like the ceiling or the floor for this team has been raised so much where it's like those guys can have huge outputs and like kind of like these big numbers, but you can still tell when their offense is just not clicking as much. And I agree with you that I think it was impressive on both nights where it felt like they didn't have it, more so in the Toronto when you didn't have Al Horford, but also they didn't have Marcus Smart in that Brooklyn Nets game.
And his absence was very noticeable.
Yes, he's one of the guys who's making their offense work. But it's like you would expect them to kind of lose one of those games in the back-to-back, especially when they're clearly just not playing their best. But in both ways, they found a way to win. They did almost choke away the game against the Raptors, but it's just they keep on like every time I would look up, it was like they weren't playing that well against the Raptors. I was like, oh, quick 10-0 run. Like the ability of this team to just like string points together or string together 4, 5, 6 possessions, and then all of a sudden they're back in this game where the lead has been extended to 10. Is just super impressive. Even on nights where they're not like clicking, you just can't let your guard down against the Celtics because they're going to pull 12 points on you so quickly.
Yeah, and it feels like they're always around the corner from one of those eruptions. I feel like they have a formula that they know they can use to win games, right? Like they know how to score points. They know what they need to do. And they know their offensive identity so well that like a lot of the times it feels like it's just like they're just going out there and doing it habitually. And like a lot of the time I don't think they have to like put too much stress into it, honestly. And so these last few games where Miami was really up for the challenge, like they played great. Like Jimmy Butler was just ridiculous. Totally disruptive.
I don't understand his mid-range jump shot ability, but it's unprecedented. It's DeMar DeRozan levels. Some of the shots he hit late in that game on Friday were absurd.
Yeah, and so I feel like the Celtics have almost been such a machine that they haven't really had too many times where they have to like figure things out and go against a team that's kind of taking them out of what they want to be. And I felt like that Miami game brought that a little bit, where the Heat forced a ton of turnovers. They were really into the passing lanes. They really made the Celtics like dig deep, and obviously they didn't get that win. But I felt like they, I don't know if they needed that because they went to the finals. Like a regular season game isn't going to really teach them too much. But it was one of the first times where I felt like they got uncomfortable and had to live with being uncomfortable. And then same thing happened in Brooklyn. Obviously, Nets aren't the best defense, but they took the Celtics out of what they wanted to do, who they want to be. Celtics only had 18 assists in that game, their lowest by far in a long time. And then the Toronto is another team that, like, they only play 6'8 guys, and they can make things really uncomfortable for you.
When Toronto is forcing turnovers, it's like I don't understand how they're not the most like unstoppable team in the league. Like when they're really clicking on defense and have all of their guys going, it's like, wow, this team should be really good. But then if you get them at all to force them to play in the half court, you're like, oh, this kind of makes sense. Like why they don't make any jump shots. It's just it's so wild how much transition is such a key to their team. And so they really like pound, like pressure the basketball and do a really good job of it. And I thought the Celtics like they fell into Toronto's trap kind of there in the first half. In the second half, they came out and did a lot better. But it's just like so wild how much different the Toronto is just like when they can create a little bit of turnovers and not just play half court the whole time, because their half court offense, not impressive. Everything else in their defense and like what they do in transition is like they should. I feel like their record should be a lot better.
The Raptors?
Yeah. Because I just see them like be so good in transition, and then it's like, why don't you just do this constantly? But that seems
and they live. They live in transition. Like, their whole goal is to just get out in transition and beat you, because probably because they know that if they don't, then they are pretty normal, pretty average. But yeah, so they can make you very uncomfortable too. So I thought this has just been a pretty good stretch for the Celtics, I think. A stretch that they can take stuff away from, because they haven't been the machine. You know, they haven't been just really humming through teams. Like, they've had to figure some stuff out on their own, on the fly.
Now, did you expect Blake Griffin to be the unsung hero of the night, starting in place of Al Horford?
How was he unsung? That was pretty fucking sung.
I don't know. I was just kind of speaking in cliches, and to be honest, I don't even know the definition of what unsung. He was not celebrated. It was unsung. Is that what that means? Because I'll have to retract that then.
Everyone was celebrating that, man.
Well, I'm looking up the definition of the word unsung. Fine. How? Did you expect Blake Griffin to come out and score? You have me flabbergasted here. Yeah, he was celebrated. He was not an unsung hero. He was a sung hero.
He was sung as fuck.
We'll sing the praises of Blake Griffin having that game-winning tip-in and scoring, what was that, 13 points in that game?
Yeah,
Blake 13 Griffin. Points, 8 rebounds from Blake Griffin. It's been very cool just to see him be like, I'm the back-to-back when Al Horford's back hurts every time. Very weird coincidence, yeah, that his back hurts every
time. He always wakes up with back pain on the second leg of back-to-backs.
But good thing that his trusty old friend Blake Griffin, who's been in the league basically the same amount of time there, is always there to come in and start. And we've seen this before where Blake Griffin will start and then not, like, you know, he like probably finished with 10 minutes. He played 33 minutes last night and taken charges, but then had that huge tip in at the end of the game to kind of seal it when the Celtics were basically trying to give the game away. I did not see. I thought Blake Griffin was completely washed. Apparently, I should have been wrong. When he had that crazy dunk in Boston a couple weeks ago, he had another huge dunk against the Raptors. I don't know. I just like this role for him. Is this guy who plays back to backs for Al Horford? Like, it feels like a pretty good fit for him.
He can still fly a little bit when he doesn't have to fly very often.
That's wise words. Wise words from Jay King, sung hero.
Sung hero, Blake Griffin. No, but it is pretty impressive. I think they're now undefeated in games that Blake Griffin has started.
That would make sense.
They're 5-0 on the second leg of back-to-backs. And I think he's only started on the second leg of back-to-backs. Let me check this out real quick. I have to make sure that I am correct. Yes, they beat the Knicks. They beat the Pistons. They beat the Hornets. They beat the Raptors. 4-0 in his starts.
Well, maybe he's the key to success here. But just didn't see it coming. Pleasant surprise for Celtics fans that Blake Griffin can just kind of have this contribution.
And in a weird way, his play yesterday against the Raptors kind of made me just have even more appreciation for Al Horford. Because Al Horford is 3 years older than Blake Griffin.
Which is wild.
And Blake Griffin played 32 minutes, and it was a crazy thing because Blake Griffin, his body, like, just hasn't been totally up to par. And obviously he's lost, like, a lot of lift, everything like that. Al Horford is 3 years older, and he plays, like, 31 minutes per game every night except the second leg of back-to-backs. And so it just kind of gives you a perspective of how long Al Horford has been doing this, how impressive it is that he's still able to be physically capable in a league that has gone away from big men a lot, and especially like less athletic big men, which most guys would become when they're 36, but Al Horford has not become. So just truly impressive. And I probably shouldn't be waxing about Al Horford because this is Blake Griffin's moment.
But, no.
But it does.
Blake Griffin is unsung, and it's a perfect transition into Al Horford got a contract extension. He will be for the Celtics with the Celtics 2 years after this, $20 million, or I think it was $19.5 million. So well into, I think he turns, will be 40 by the end of that contract, basically locks in another part of this core. And he's making $27 million this year. So a bit of a pay cut, but I think that makes sense for where his age. What was your reaction to the Celtics and Brad Stevens just, you know, locking up Al Horford for another 2 years? Is Al Horford Brad Stevens' favorite player? Like, everything he does is just all about getting out more Al Horford.
Well, Brad has been an extension guy, with the exception of Grant Williams. He's handed out a lot of extensions. Marcus Smart extension, Robert Williams extension, Al Horford extension, Josh Richardson extension.
That's a thing. He can extend and still trade you, but he does like to extend.
Yeah, big extend guy. So, but I think it's just, it makes sense for both sides. Horford clearly still impactful. Clearly a big part of what the Celtics are doing and will continue to do. And from his perspective, he probably could have chased a little bit more money after this season. But realistically, like, he's going to be 37, or he would have been 37 when he hit free agency. And I'm not sure anyone would have given him much more than the Celtics did. So he could have chased like a few more bucks. But the flip side of that is now he's locked into a team that he believes in, a place where he believes they can compete for championships. And the last few years of his career will be meaningful, and playing in big games and playing for a team that I think he really appreciates. Just the way the Celtics are playing. Like, Al Horford just appreciates beautiful basketball and winning basketball. And I feel like he's always, like, when the Celtics first started their turnaround last year, I feel like Al Horford was the happiest guy in the world. And remember, they were beating the shit out of bad teams at first. And so people were skeptical that they had actually turned around. And Al was like, oh, no. Oh, no, like, we are doing things differently now. We are playing the right brand of basketball. Like, it doesn't matter who we've beaten, just the way we're playing. Like, that's what it's about. And so I feel like he just really wants to be in Boston. He saw in Philadelphia, he saw in Oklahoma City, like, two different ways for things to go kind of poorly for him. One, because he just didn't fit in Philly, and two, because the Thunder just didn't have a team that was capable of winning. So he likes where he is, and just kind of makes sense for both sides.
Yeah, it's low risk for the Celtics, like $10 million a year. There's no, like, one that I guess if you could trade it.
That's Tristan Thompson money.
Exactly. He's so much better than Tristan Thompson. But Al Horford is shooting 46% from three this year, still giving you 10 points a game. You basically have him on a program where he's doesn't have to play back to backs. He's, you said, 31 minutes a game. I would hope and imagine that would go down when Robert Williams returns, which is how you segue to a new topic. Robert Williams is back, or soon, or will be back. He's playing 5-on-5. Jay King at Celtics practice taking footage of him for Twitter out there. Joe Mazzulla saying he's coming back soon. I know there's not a obvious timetable for when he is going to return, but clearly he's making steps in the right direction. Jay, how do you think they, like, kind of work him back into the lineup? Do you think they, like, bring him off the bench? Do you think they limit him, like, time limit, like, minutes restrictions, like 20 minutes a game to start? How do you think that impacts this team? And do you think it changes kind of, like, I don't know, I guess the concern is it changes their historically great offense. Obviously you think he's going to have an impact on the defensive end, but what do you think the impact of Robert Williams returning has just on the rotation and on how this team's playing right now?
It'll be really interesting to see what Mazzulla does, because I do think it's going to take a while for Robert Williams to get back to game shape. He hasn't played in a while. And Like it's going to take him a while to get his rhythm back, get his conditioning back, to be the guy who just jumps and jumps and jumps and jumps and jumps.
No, he's that right now. Like he always loves jumping, but yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, and then for Missoula, like this team has been winning because of offense. And the formula is different right now than it was last season. Like they're playing small lineups, they're playing a ton of shooting, they are spreading the court, and they've had a lot of success that way. Does Missoula start Robert Williams next to Al Horford and go big and change the identity a little bit, get more defensive minded? Does he bring Robert Williams off the bench? Just put him in the Luke Kornet role and try it like that. I think Missoula has options, and I think, like, depending on situation, you could see them go big, you could see them go small, but it will be a decision for Missoula. I don't think it's obvious, like, yeah, just start Robert Williams next to Al Horford, and because what they're doing right now with all the offense, like, that's working too.
Many two big lineups have they used this year? And like,
very few.
Do you count a Grant Williams lineup as a two big lineup, or is that just he's just a floor spacer? Because I can't think of a situation, like, even if you have Grant and Al out there, or Grant and Kornet, that's still a guy who's a legitimate knockdown shooter from, like, who can be in the corner. Al Horford is great, and he is shooting 46% from the field, but there's a difference with playing Al Horford at power forward and playing Grant Williams at power forward. And it's just the spacing and all the things that made the offense so great now. It just, you can't imagine that it'd be the exact same if you have Al and Rob Williams on the floor at the same time.
Yeah. And like, that's a good problem to have, right? Like choosing between the best offense in history or
the best, like, defense in history. Yeah.
You know, like that's a pretty good problem to have. And I think ultimately Robert Williams' return will give the Celtics a lot of flexibility to change their styles that they haven't had yet. Like you said, the two big lineup, like how often has Horford played with Kornet or Blake Griffin or Noah Vonleh? Like very, very rarely. And the Celtics, like, they've tried playing big a couple of times, but not really. And never consistently. So it's going to be a change for them. The thing that I think could be, like, just totally dominant is Robert Williams in bench units in the Luke Kornet role, because, like, those units that they've played with the bench with Malcolm Brogdon, Sam Hauser, Grant Williams, Jason Tatum.
I think people refer to it as the Legion of Boom. That's normally what I hear it referred to as.
Or Boom Shakalaka.
Yeah, that's what most people say.
Yeah. But just a little nickname humor there.
Yeah.
But that works with Luke Kornet putting pressure on the rim. Like, imagine how it's going to be when Robert Williams is the one putting pressure on the rim, and how open that's going to make Sam Hauser, how open that's going to make Grant Williams, how open that's going to make Jason Tatum and Malcolm Brogdon. Like, that is just going to be a tough, tough, tough lineup for teams to handle. And I really think, like, that could be an absolute differentiator for the Celtics. And Luke Kornet, like, he's been pretty good. But with Robert Williams in there, his activity, his athleticism, his, like, just the amount of stress he puts on a defense is going to be really, really, really tough for opponents to handle. Like, that to me is a lineup that could be just outrageous. Especially, like, against bench units.
And that's kind of the luxury of Rob Williams returning, is that the Celtics are playing so well. You don't need Rob Williams when he comes back to immediately step in and be 30 minutes a night. You basically just need him to come in and play Luke Kornet's role and like work that way up. And you're right, like, that, as much as I love Luke Kornet, as much as I thought there's another chance at a double-double last night against the Raptors, he just doesn't rebound the ball enough. Luke Kornet boxes out, let other people get the rebound. So I don't think he's going to get two double-doubles by Christmas, but we'll see. But Rob Williams could come back and play 15 minutes a night or 20 minutes a night. The Celtics are playing so well that obviously I think at their top tier, you're going to want to start Robert Williams and he's going to be one of your top guys. But right now, because they're playing so well and the type of basketball they're playing, let him work his way back and let him play on those bench units. And I agree, they're going to be dangerous. And I think having like the option of going double big, I don't think it's necessarily going to be their best unit, but like the thing that I think it just makes them more dangerous and more versatile, and playing against teams that are slightly bigger, maybe you're going to want to have that just as an option that Bazooka Joe can go to, you know, like playing against the teams like the Cavs, who they've lost to twice, who have two big men. Maybe it just makes things a little bit easier for them, but they're in this position where their season is not riding on the return of Robert Williams. It's like anything he kind of gives you as you build back up is just a bonus at this point.
Yeah, but let's be honest. Like, they need him functioning at a high level to...
By April, though.
They need it like... Yeah, yeah. And that's going to be the journey of finding out where he fits. Should he start? Should he not start? How often will he be in the closing lineup versus Horford? How often will he be in the closing lineup with Horford? And again, like these are just, it's good to have that additional flexibility. And last year, the Celtics, I think they felt like when they went small, they didn't have too many options to do so. And now they have more options. You know, they with Malcolm Brogdon, that's a big deal. Derek White has been shooting really well lately. Like, that could be a game changer for them if it's sustainable. And then having the option to go bigger and more athletic with Robert Williams, like, that's it's just Joe Mazzulla is going to have a lot more options once Rob returns than he does right now. And
it's like... It's like when you're at the beach and you only have the tools to build a small sandcastle, and then your friend comes along and brings a Rob Williams-sized bucket, and now you can build a much bigger sandcastle. You have more sandcastle options, is what I'm trying to say.
I can't believe I wrote about sandcastles.
I can't believe it either, but I enjoy the fact that you did. What? That was the most ridiculous quote.
I had a Google search for magnetic sand because I wasn't sure what magnetic sand is.
Tell me what magnetic sand is.
They have some in their locker room. So I believe it's like sand inside like a glass where you can touch it and it like moves, right? I could be wrong though.
So you're saying sand with like magnets in it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Can you explain just the fuller context for the listeners out there who may not have read your story about the magnetic sand?
Yeah, so essentially Joe Mazzulla told the Celtics on the first day of training camp, like he gave them this whole metaphor about sandcastles and how you have to build a sandcastle every day because it's going to get wiped away by the tide, and then the next day you got to just do it all over again. Basically saying, like, we need to do it every day. We need to work on our habits every day. And
it's a real Kaizen mind trick. It's a real growth mindset type of metaphor, if I do say so myself.
And the Celtics, they were kind of hilarious, like, sort of shitting on it, but also but also buying into it. Like, Marcus Smart, my first question about sandcastles, I don't even remember what the question was. But he goes, man, I wish I never had to see a sandcastle ever again.
So he shows him a sandcastle every day, right?
Literally every single day, he shows either a photo of a sandcastle or video of a sandcastle. One day, so they have magnetic sand in their film room, just sort of really building out the metaphor.
Really,
and one day Mazzulla punched the magnetic sand, like, our sandcastle's gone. We got to build a new one, guys. Like, literally giving them the imagery himself. And I was like, is that after a loss? Like, was he pissed off? They were like, no, that was the day after a win. Like, he wasn't pissed. He was just trying to emphasize the message a little bit.
But I just love the idea of him being like the first day of just being like giving it to the video guy and being like, look, we're going with the sandcastle metaphor. And this is going to be our thing. It's a bold play from Joe Mazzulla, rookie head coach.
Do you think like Ime would have stuffed him in a locker if he brought up that idea? Don't you think?
Absolutely. I'm surprised no one on the Celtics didn't. I mean, I love how they just all called him out for being like, yeah, it's pretty corny, but we understand it's a metaphor. We have to put the work in, but he's been really consistent. He loves the sandcastle metaphor.
You know who was big into the sandcastle metaphor? And I didn't put the quote into my story, but I got to share it now because Luke Kornet gave like
a eloquent answer about sandcastles and how they fit in time and space.
It was such an eloquent answer about sandcastles. I got to get the full quote here so that I don't fuck it up, because it was majestic. He turned it into a philosophical thing about how people learn. So I asked him if the message hit, and he said, I actually like it. I think it's great to just have a little image that ties in the whole idea versus having to say the words every time. And it's how we kind of work honestly as people. Images can translate a whole lot more than just having to say it over and over again. So I think it's effective. It's an easy way to just kind of register a whole web of ideas and thoughts. like just really into the idea of using an image rather than words.
That's beautiful, and that's Boston Celtics basketball right now, just building sandcastle after sandcastle.
Magnetic sand.
Are you ready for the unsung hero of this show? No, he's sung, I would say. The sung hero of this show, the one who's been really upped his game over the past year.
Oh, yes, I am.
Joshua B., come on down. How's it going, Joshua?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Doing well. Great,
baby.
This has been the good podcast. This is what I'm waiting for you guys. This is the mood. I'm just the Grant Williams of this podcast. You guys are the Tatum and the Brown. All I do is move to the side and shoot a three. That's it, literally.
You've upped your game, and now you can attack the basket a little bit more.
So here's what I've got for you about the singing. The entire Celtics team is unsung. The definition of unsung, celebrating in the moment. Blake Griffin was the definition of unsung because he played 32 minutes last night. Speaking of unsung, Derek White was not expected to be shooting 43.4% from three. Grant Williams, not expected to be shooting 45% off the bench from three. Sam Hauser was not expected to be shooting 45.3% from three and 49.4% overall. Our ultra energy guy, the one you might have been expecting to shoot well from three, Peyton Pritchard, he's the low guy at 36.8% from three. Al Horford taking less money to sing with the Celtics, shooting 46% from the field. Jaylen Brown with zero turnovers in the past three games. Marcus Smart ranking 17th in the NBA from turnover ratio. Our MVP, Jason Tatum, would be singing, except he's too busy picking Kevin Durant's pocket over and over again. And I
did you write all these down?
Yeah, I did.
Of course he did. He's prepared, baby.
Because I take my cue from Jay King, the best writer in the entire realm of The Athletic. That's what I
do. Wow, thank you.
Damn right. And I haven't even brought up that Rob Williams will be singing when he's returned, whenever he wants, because the Celtics are 20-5, and Blake Griffin is apparently playing 32 minutes a night. Sure, I hope he can ease in. I feel confident in saying only one thing, and that this Celtics team will still beat the Bucks no matter what happens with Chris Middleton the rest of this season. So to finish my quick hitter with the question, do you think that Blake Griffin playing 32 minutes a night will help Robert Williams ease into playing shape? Because I know that's one of our big concerns.
I think there's no pressure to play Robert Williams a lot right away. Luke Kornet has proven a viable backup center. Blake Griffin has been serviceable when needed on the second leg of back-to-backs. The Celtics, I feel like, honestly, they probably did a bad job managing the center spot early in the season. Like Noah Vonleh was playing a lot of minutes. Cornette wasn't playing at all. But Mazzulla kind of fixed that, addressed that. Now Cornette is their regular backup center. Griffin is the fill-in starter when Horford sits. And they just found something that I think works. So, yeah, like there's no pressure on Robert Williams to come back and play 30 minutes right away. They can kind of build him up and do it so that with a focus on him being healthy long term, which is really what matters. Him being ready in April so that he's not hobbling around like he had to do in the playoffs last season. Like when he was right, and he wasn't even all the way right, but he was semi-right during parts of that Warrior series. And he was such a difference maker. He was the ultimate difference maker. Like when he was on the court, the Warriors had so much more trouble getting to the rim. The Celtics had so much more success. And that was with him like not really right. Not fully able to be athletic and jump and do all the stuff that he normally does. So if they can get him back to being healthy, like that is such an important addition to this Celtics team. But I do think I said this to somebody the other day. I think I was chatting with my guy Tim Bontemps, and I said I think when Robert Williams comes back, and sounds like that's pretty soon, according to Joe Mazzulla, I think that will be the Celtics' worst stretch of basketball of the season. Like right when he comes back and they have to adjust to having him and he's not fully right. And that's okay. Like it doesn't really matter if they lose a few games because Robert Williams is getting reacclimated. Like that really doesn't matter. But I do think for like a little while he's still working back into things, like it's going to be tough to add him. Like right now that they're really like operating like a machine. And now you're bringing in this super important piece who's probably not at the level that he usually is just because he hasn't played for such a long time. I do think there's probably going to be like some rocky moments for the Celtics once Rob gets back, but that doesn't matter at all as long as he's that difference maker in the playoffs.
I think it's like, how much are you just trying to put an emphasis on getting him back to like playing 30 minutes a game, or how much you're just trying to like win individual basketball games? Because like, I don't know, they could just have him come back and just play the Luke Cornette role and play like 15 minutes a night, and you're not going to get him to where you need him to be, but you still probably win basketball games and make it less of an adjustment. But I agree. I think there's needs to be more of an emphasis of like getting them in a rhythm with everyone playing comfortably. And I don't think he's going to like hurt the offense, his vertical spacing. And it's like, he's a good passer. I think it's going to work out for the Celtics. I feel like they're in a good position. It's just going to be interesting to see when he actually does come back. Because I didn't think he was going to come back before Christmas, but given where he is now, that might be the case, that he could be here sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Yeah. But before we go, I got to shout out my guy, Joe. So this guy, Joe, came up to me, introduced himself, called himself a big fan, whatever. And then like a few minutes later revealed that he was not a subscriber to The Athletic.
Big fan of the pod, then.
So big fan of me only because he's never read my work, which well, I can appreciate. But I made a deal with him that if he subscribed to The Athletic on the spot, then I would share his two hottest takes.
Ooh, I like this. If you guys subscribe to The Athletic in front of us, we'll share your takes on the podcast.
So Joe's hottest take number one is that Luka Doncic is, and I'm quoting Joe here, a fucking fraudulent MVP candidate. And hot take number two.
Hold on. Let's react to that. Yeah, I can see it. The Mavericks aren't very good. I'll buy it, Joe. I'll buy it a little bit.
The Mavericks are not very good. If they continue to be as mediocre as they have been, Luka probably will not win MVP, especially with all the other guys who have had fantastic seasons so far. But Joe was very passionate about that take. And then take number two is that Marcus Smart should be an all-star.
That's a bold take. Did he have any facts to back this up?
No, he's a big Marcus Smart guy and thinks Smart should be an all-star. And I was kind of, after he said, I was kind of trying to like go through in my head what it would take for Smart to make the all-star team. And
I love Marcus Smart. I trust Marcus Smart. I don't think there's any way Marcus Smart's going to be an all-star.
So the only kind of like thing that I've like the support for it is that like when the Hawks had their ridiculous start to the season, however many years ago, Kyle Korver was an all-star. You know,
yeah, but I think the league is so much deeper. This league is so much deeper now than it was when Kyle Korver was an all-star. Like, I understand you can get away, it's like, say the Celtics don't lose a game. I don't think that automatically that's going to put in Marcus Smart to the all-star game unless he starts averaging like 20 points a game. Like, do you even know if Jaylen Brown's a guaranteed all-star at this point?
Jaylen Brown will likely be an all-star.
I think he will be, but I think it's not guaranteed in a way just because of the league. I feel like there's so many more stars and so many like higher quality players where you just don't know at this point.
Yeah. And Smart's all-star case has never been stronger. Let's say that way. He's not going to make the all-star team, but his all-star case has never been stronger. He's averaging 12-8. He's shooting 45% from the field, which is so far beyond what he's ever shot in his life. His highest field goal percentage before this season was 42.2%, and he's at 45.3 right now. His three-point shooting, almost a career high, 35.7%. The one step back he hit against Toronto was just stupid. And I mean that it was really a stupid shot.
It was a poor decision.
But it went in. It went in. And every once in a while, the Smart heat check works out. But he is really important to them on both sides of the court. And I think his importance to the offense is like, it was so evident when he was not there against Brooklyn. The ball movement stopped. The player movement wasn't nearly the same. Like he runs a lot of what they do.
And his chemistry with Tatum, like the end of that Raptors game, Smart Tatum pick and roll with Tatum as the screener, and just how many times Smart got Tatum the ball with like at the basically the foul line with some space, it just makes it Tatum that much more dangerous. I feel like Smart is just always make it like looking to like set his teammates up and get his guys in the right position. And I feel like he's clicking with basically the entire team. And let's not forget, he was the one who called out the Stars for not passing enough about a year ago. So he must be loving this like kind of basketball where they're playing the heavy assists and the ball movement. And I feel like he's a major part of that.
Indeed. So shout out to my guy, Joe, who did sign up for The Athletic on the spot.
Which you guys should do too, or you can just accost us in public and then we'll reveal all your takes as long as you sign up for The Athletic in front of us. Jay King will then say your opinions on this basketball podcast, which some people would call Anything Is Possible!